gentlemen, it's the Stephanie Miller Show.
It is the Stephanie Miller Show. Welcome to it. Okay, you know what's funny about that?
What?
Katrina from Katrina and the Waves is in the next studio.
Yes.
She'll be joining us in about a half an hour, and hopefully not asking for any money. We should have changed it back to we're not going to take it anymore.
Oh, dagnabbit.
What are the chances that guy was going to be in here?
Although he has heard that you used to use that as the theme song.
Dee Snider.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, he did ask me for money on the phone. I hung up on him.
And he's a bit of a conservative, isn't he?
I know it.
Hmm.
All right. She is. She's doing vocal exercises in the next room.
Sweet. Can you hear it? Like through the...
Yes.
Through the, oh, wow.
She sounds awesome.
Can we... Can we...
Hmm?
We can't hear
no,
it. No,
you can't hear
okay.
it.
Well...
I'm in a soundproof room, like as is often the case in radio. Hello.
What?
StephanieMiller.com is the website. Check it out. You can email us all there. Executive producer Chris Lavoie, voice deity Jim Ward, or me, Stephanie Miller. A jam-packed show. We have Craig Crawford coming up,
mm-hmm.
our favorite Chuckley pundit. And Lawrence Korb, who was a former Assistant Secretary of Defense under Ronald Reagan.
Yes.
So he can, see if he can cure some of the conservatives of their amnesia over nuclear weapons.
Yeah.
Whatever.
Mm-hmm. All right. So lots to get to. Oh, I don't know if Mama on the MSNBC is up on the YouTube's section. They moved my hit time up and forgot to tell me, and so I had about 5 minutes for makeup. So check it out. See how Mama looks.
Oh, dear.
Yeah, I know. It's a...
I'm sure you look fine.
Mama needs a little more time there and makeup.
A little more spackle?
Exactly. Yes. By the way, speaking of MSNBC, I love this hilarious story about Rachel Maddow in the People magazine.
Mm-hmm.
First of all, the MSNBC host, 37, oh, she's young, and her artist, her artist girlfriend, Susan, who I've met and is lovely, spend each weekend at their quaint home 3 hours north of New York in western Massachusetts. It doesn't have cable or a TV,
ew.
Which is a fun fact. But here's the even funner fact. The couple met in 1999 when Maddow, who then worked odd jobs, was hired to do yard work on Susan's property in the Berkshires.
I heard that.
Rachel said it was very Desperate Housewives about how their relationship began. Oh, I got to say something. I am actually, can I just say something about my fine American friends, Ed Schultz and Rachel Maddow at MSNBC? Those are great American stories, aren't they?
They certainly are.
She was doing yard work in 1999. Ed Schultz was in Fargo. Now he's in 30 Rock. I'm just saying. Yes, I'm a loser. My point is, look how well they're doing. All right. Speaking of MSNBC, just watching it last night, as I do, because who do I love?
You love
among others, Richard
Wolff.
Exactly, journalist extraordinaire.
I thought you were going to say, speaking of losers.
No.
No, I've adored you from afar, and I'm just so thrilled
Thank
you come on
you.
With us.
Thank you.
Well,
you're making me embarrassed.
Oh, heavens. Well, a lot of stuff going on. How did this, the Bachman-Palin overdrive thing yesterday, first of all, Palin dressed like Stevie Nicks, not sure why. but it's, the thing that kills me, I always love watching Pat Buchanan, is, these are a couple of great-looking women, Chris.
Pat Buchanan sometimes resembles that 70s show. I mean, unreconstructed stuff. There's no question that they appeal to a certain male older demographic, and there are, it has to be said, there are women too who love Sarah Palin, but a serious political agenda aspiration movement, the two of them together, please carry on doing it, because I think those people like Pat Buchanan who think that this can turn into some kind of long-lasting movement have got to be disappointed, even if he doesn't admit it on TV.
Yeah, well, as a woman, Richard, I always get accused of being a bitter, childless loser that's jealous of Sarah Palin. And let me say, I am a bitter, childless loser, but I'm a bitter, childless loser that agrees with about 70% of the country that she's just not qualified to be president of the United States. I mean, that's the thing, is that you don't want to make it seem... but you have to sort of, say it like it is, don't you? They're not bright. They tend to... to tell lies that are easily disprovable, and they use this inflammatory rhetoric that I think is dangerous in the wake of all of these real acts of violence, don't you think?
Well, I do think it's dangerous. I thought it was dangerous through the campaign. There was a lot of sort of mob incitement that was going on, and that has continued. And it's continued with the help, let's name names, of Fox News and conservative talk radio,
yes,
where they are propagating lies, smears, distortions, you name it, and most of them with a racial and sort of anti-terrorist kind of tinge to it. And there is a continuum. It started in the campaign with the Muslim stuff. And it has gone on through then. And,
right, palling around with terrorists. And but then, Richard, when you have these real cases of someone getting arrested for threatening Nancy Pelosi and Patty Murray, this rhetoric that you hear at these Tea Party rallies about these people. I mean,
you can't control it. You can't control it. And the country has a sad history of crazy people doing crazy things. And look, I know a lot of people were sort of joking around or poo-pooing what happened to Eric Cantor. The problem is here, they're crazy people. You don't know where it's going to go. It could be just regular police officers in the middle of the country because mm-hmm. they become emblematic of whatever the crazy people think that they want to attack. So inciting this stuff is very dangerous. I will say one thing, though, just about Sarah Palin. The more people have got to know her and hear from her, the less qualified they think she is. Now, that is not a sustainable path for any politician. And the fallacy that all of this is built on isn't really about Sarah Palin. It's about Barack Obama. The guy made it look easy. And if it's easy, then, hey, anyone can do this thing,
well,
right?
You know, as a woman, I have to say, watching that thing yesterday, Richard, it strikes me as the movie Mean Girls. I mean, absolutely, they're both very beautiful women. but you almost think that makes it more dangerous. It's like it's sort of packaged in this, you know, sort of, I guess, aesthetically pleasing package. But when you listen to the things they're saying, you know, Michelle Bachmann, I want you armed and dangerous. You know, Sarah Palin has crosshairs on her website on Democrats. Right. She keeps saying, I think in Right Wing World later today on our show, she said it again, we need to reload. It's like, why do you need to use that rhetoric is my question.
Well, we know what kind of language they're using and what kind of signal this is. And part of it is to get a reaction. So, you know, in a way, we're all just feeding into it. And every time Chris Matthews goes after Rush, and it makes them happy. They want to have that fight. But if you have any serious ambition, and that's a big if in this case, if you have a sense of responsibility for what politics should be, if you say that you support your country and the troops, then you've got to take this stuff seriously. And throwing around this kind of language isn't a game. I can understand it more, frankly, if and when Glenn Beck runs and make, you know, if one of those media guys decides that it's going to be great for ratings and they can have a lot of fun by pretending to have a presidential campaign, like Stephen Colbert, but, you know, kind of a bit more seriously. Well, that's one thing. But Sarah Palin was, briefly, an elected official, and Michelle Bachmann is. So these people should have some sense of responsibility. The thing that drove me crazy in the presidential campaign was that Sarah Palin just didn't seem to take this stuff seriously. She didn't brief. She didn't read her briefing. She didn't mug up for anything. And now we know from her, the people trying to work with her in the campaign, they thought that, too. She was not being serious about being a presidential, vice presidential candidate.
Yeah. Well, and Richard, that's the thing. Maybe I'm being naive. I don't mind, you know, having a good fight on policy. But, you know, for instance, now you've got three Republican governors are going against their Democratic attorney generals to file lawsuits, which pretty much any trusted legal scholar will tell you has no chance of being overturned, is not unconstitutional, wasting state taxpayers' money for this. I mean, it's just...
Yeah, you know, what I love most about this is that the people who rail against trial lawyers and activist judges
are looking for some now.
Lawsuits. Because they couldn't win in the democratic process, in the elected officials debate, so they're going through the courts. So that's not activism. That's not abuse of the courts. That's fighting for patriotism. Look, it's politics, and I imagine, like the repeal movement, which lived for about a week, this one will also fail. But whether or not you play politics, I don't think voters are going to reward you at this time. They want practical solutions to their problems, and there are many economic problems out there. Those governors should be dealing with jobs and trying to find a way that makes it look like they're creating jobs or helping to create jobs. That means, you know, avoiding this kind of politics.
Yep. I mean, speaking of playing politics, I mean, John McCain, can he get any more pathetic at this point? I mean, you know, he literally has backtracked on everything he has ever stood for, including, you know, bills and planes and books with his name on them. You know, in this latest one, he's backtracking. He said the exact same thing about nuclear policy, and now, of course, he's against it because Barack Obama is for it.
Yeah, that is one of the things that Republicans have said for many years, and the people in the center or on the left who like John McCain kind of ignored all of that stuff. They said, okay, so it doesn't matter that he's been inconsistent because he's working with us and he's doing bipartisan stuff, so it doesn't matter. Well, you know, the John McCain that the Republicans talked about was this flighty guy who couldn't hold down one position and had this sort of emotional knee-jerk reaction to events around him, and certainly personal events around him more than sort of principled ones. So, you know, this is, as many Republicans are saying on Capitol Hill, this is the old John McCain. You just didn't want to see him.
Yeah. Well, speaking of politics, so more bad news for Michael Steele. The RNC raised $11 million, which is good. The DNC did even better, though. $13 million.
Even worse, they spent $11
million. Right, yes. Exactly.
Yes, apparently at the lesbian bondage club.
it's certainly expensive tipping nowadays.
Yeah.
He has the office, but he doesn't have the authority. He doesn't have the respect, and it's kind of pathetic now. But it tells you something about the state of the party that they couldn't agree on anyone, so they agreed on him, and he's never been able to shore up any support or build any foundation. Eventually the Republicans will figure something out, but it's going to have to probably wait until they get a nominee.
Well, I hate to say it, but I we've mentioned this a lot during the whole course of the campaign. It seems like the most pathetic example of them trying to say, look, we're inclusive too. Like, you've got a black guy, we've got a black guy, you've got a woman, we've got a woman. You know, and as my co-host Jim Ward says, you do get that it's not just any woman, right? Or any black guy.
No, they didn't just get that, no. I suspect if they had the same election with the same candidates, you know, after the town halls, they'd have chosen someone completely different. At the time he was elected, they thought nobody could touch Barack Obama, and then they decided they could all touch him with a taser. So it's kind of, you know, their own attitudes have changed, and he has clearly run a terrible organization. Having said all of that, you know, their bigger mistake, I think, was that they thought they could that he was a sort of Howard Dean figure. Howard Dean at least had a game plan in mind. He may have been erratic about how he executed it, but he had a plan. I don't know that Michael Steele really ever had a plan other than to put lots of pretty faces
on their website. Right. Other than to sell his own books and speeches, I guess. Speaking of books you should buy, I highly recommend Renegade, The Making of a President by Richard Wolff.
Well, thank you. So does my publisher.
Yes.
I highly recommend it too.
Richard, thanks as always. A great pleasure to talk to you.
Thank you so much.
All right. There he goes. Richard Wolff.
Hooray!
Journalist extraordinaire. Slumming once again on my show. 20 minutes after the hour, right back with Katrina from Katrina and the Waves and God knows what else.
Yeah, God knows what else.
As we continue on the Stephanie Miller Show.
I am shocked and appalled.
It's the Stephanie Miller Show.
It is the Stephanie Miller Show, 25 minutes after the hour. 1-800-STEPH-1-2, the phone number, toll free from anywhere. You were just telling, my touching story music? You were just telling me a touching story. Oh, about people that have worked with me that have shown me the respect that I'm entitled to.
Yes.
In previous years.
Unlike your current co-workers.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly. This is so hilarious. Somebody told you this, you're like, Stephanie had a... She had a 7-foot tall producer once that he's a famous doctor now. I was like, What? I'm like, how many 7 foot tall producers could I have had? And then I remembered Odie. But this is like, so when is he coming on?
He's coming on Monday.
This is such an amazing story. In fact, I dreamed about him all night last night. He, in the midst of this whole healthcare fight.
Right.
He's an orthopedic surgeon now. So see, Chris, you could make something of yourself someday.
Yeah. I don't think I've become a doctor anytime soon.
You could be a doctor, damn it. Do something with your life, Chris.
Oh, God.
Don't have this be your legacy. No,
was producing for you like his part-time job while he was in medical school or something?
It was 1,000 years ago. Anyway, he is an orthopedic surgeon, Dr. Dan, in Chicago now, and he does all these surgeries for free for people without insurance.
Wow.
I mean, when do you hear about something like this?
Never.
And he was always that guy. He helped me put my stupid demo tape together after I got fired.
You're fired.
And I got another job in New York.
Oh.
And I've always loved him. He's always had that kind of heart. It's like in the midst of this kind of, you know, greedy insurers and all that. Mm-hmm. I mean, he literally, in fact, so he's coming on Monday. He said he's moving some surgeries around.
Yeah, he shifted his OR schedule in order to do this interview.
He does as many as 800 surgeries a year. Half of his patients are uninsured.
Wow.
You know what? He just does it because it's the right thing to do.
Yep.
When have you heard that kind of story?
How does your
and it's
living?
All from working with
Stephanie Miller.
You see, that's what that. I don't know. See how I brought it back to me?
Yeah, you did.
Mm. All right. Anyway, but he wrote some notes when he confirmed about coming up.
He said, "Tell Ms. Miller that I absolutely love her crazy self, and not a day goes by without me thinking very positive thoughts about her." He then went on to say, "Whether she knows it or not, she has been a huge influence on me and what I'm doing. Wish we could still be working together."
He wishes what? He wants to be working on a fart joke show instead of being a brilliant orthopedic surgeon? I think he made that part up. All right. All right. Thank you, Dr. Dan. We will see you on Monday. That was very exciting. And then my old radio partner, Brother Weeze, called yesterday and left a very touching message.
Aww.
Have I just gotten to be a bigger bitch, or do you think you and Rebecca just hate me?
Well.
Just because.
Probably a little all of the above.
I probably have gotten to be a bigger bitch. You know. That's what happens. Life's a bitch, and then you become one.
Uh-huh.
You know how it is.
You move to Broadway, and then you become a bitch.
Exactly.
Uh-huh.
You get away from Hollywood, and then, you know, you find out there's no booze and dope here, and you're right away.
Stephanie Miller.
They drummed you right out of Hollywood. So you come crawling back to Broadway.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Broadway doesn't go for booze and dope. Now you get out of my way, because I've got a man waiting for me.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. See, and then that last part's not true, and then you're even crankier.
Right.
That's how that goes. All right, Dale in Asheville, North Carolina, real quick, writes, Steph, concerning the Tea Party meeting with Michelle Bachmann and Sarah Palin, there's a Jack in the Box commercial where two women sit on a couch and talk about their sandwiches. Jack turns to the camera and says, "This is the worst commercial I've ever seen." One of the women says, "We could kiss." That's the only thing that would have made that entertaining yesterday, the Palin-Bachmann overdrive. All right, 29 minutes after the hour, Katrina is in the hizzy of Katrina in the Waves. Of my theme song.
Yes.
Although we won't admit that. Yes, we will.
Okay.
All right. I'll get some pocket change ready in case
what if she's a raging conservative?
Right back on the Stephanie Miller Show.
Good morning, I'm
Stephanie Miller,
news veteran of 44 years, and now reduced to co-hosting this local morning chat show. Just passing the time till I die.
Oh, goodness, that's what I went to the broadcasting barn school for, is for someone to tell me, stall, Katrina's
stall?
Finishing up her last
stretch.
Interview.
Stretch. Did they give you the international symbol for stretch?
Yes. By the way, there are no waves in attendance. There is only Katrina. All right.
Does she still talk to the waves?
I don't. This is the many things that we need to find out.
Mm-hmm.
All right, which we will.
She's still very beautiful. I saw her in one of those, you know, Where Are They Now specials. She's very beautiful.
I caught a brief glimpse as I was going by. I was like, oh, that's Katrina doing vocal exercises. Why? All right. Just a little bit of how am I doing so far? Stretching. How's that going for me? Look. Lavender Pitt, the official roller derby queen of the Stephanie Miller Show, is calling. Hey, Lavender. Welcome.
Hey, Mama. Good morning.
Good morning.
So as
I start my morning commute, I turn on the radio, and before I even had the pleasure of your dulcet tones, I had John McCain's latest campaign commercial.
Oh, and what does Grampy say now?
Well, he didn't say he was a maverick. He avoided that one like the plague. But he is a lone force for good. And
is he?
He's Arizona's last line of defense. Did you know?
He's a what?
Arizona's last line of defense.
That's what I heard.
Oh, is he now? Is he now? He's a lone voice, meaning no one agrees with him anymore, which is not a good thing to run on.
The scary thing is he's actually the reasonable Republican choice against the nut job running against him.
That's a sad state of affairs. Thank you, Lavender. Hey, Chris, let's pretend like we're starting the show over again. You wanna?
Sure.
Okay.
Ladies and gentlemen, it's the Stephanie Miller Show.
Is that going to cost me, Katrina? Just that part right there.
How much is your lunch going to cost me? That smells really good in here. Is it you or is it the chop suey?
It's my Chinese food.
Well, that smells really good.
Ladies and gentlemen, it's Katrina.
Hooray.
From Katrina and the Waves.
Hello. Good morning. That's a really weird breakfast, though.
I know. I'm a really weird chick.
What happened to pancakes and French toast?
I'm not a breakfast food girl.
No.
I'm a leftover Chinese food kind of girl.
I can tell by your figure you're not much of a really eat anything ever at any time girl.
Oh, shoot, sweet. By the way, my producer was just commenting on your hotness before you got in here.
Yes.
Oh, God. Yeah. Well, it has been warm, hasn't it?
Yes. You look great.
Thank you.
What can I tell you? That song... I just love it. It's always made me happy. And so when Obama got elected, we used to play We're Not Going to Take It Anymore until I found out that Dee Snider is a big right-wing tool. And when George Bush was president, this was our...
Yes.
And then when Obama got elected, I picked my happiest song ever, Walking on Sunshine.
Oh, I'm so glad you did. Thank you. It's
the happiest song ever. What was it about and where did it come from? I have to know.
Right. Well, the song was written by our guitar player from Katrina and the Waves named Kim Rue. And he wrote the song. He had bronchitis. It was February 1982 or 1983.
Right.
He presented the song and we thought we were such a cool band. We thought we were the Velvet Underground. We were like this garage band.
Yeah.
And he came with this and we were all, the bass player said, well, it's irritating. And Kim said, yeah, but, you know, it's got the irritation factor, which could really work for it. So we were kind of counting on that. And then I just thought that, well, it was impossibly loud and high. And I thought, can I do this in falsetto? He said, no, go ahead and belt it. And we wanted it to be kind of like, it's got the same beat as the Supremes, You Can't Hurry Love.
Right.
You know,
yes.
We kind of love that music. And it just kind of grew from there. It was always a dance floor emptier, though, because people didn't know how to dance to it. And they would just dance in this really embarrassing dad dancing way.
Yes.
You know,
like they were walking on the sun.
And,
yes.
And they always flake out. By the time the song's finished, everybody's just quite physically exasperated. And they're not dancing at all. They're just sort of nodding. So that's why we kept the song so short. It just sort of fizzled out. But it's a useful song because it makes me happy as well. You know, you just played that little bit, and I thought, let's party.
Yes, exactly.
Tequilaville, which is where I went last night, which is, wow. Okay.
Where do you live now?
Well, I live in London.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I just flew in yesterday, and I'm staying around the Grand Central Station area, and there's just this place called Tequilaville, and I thought, that sounds good to me.
Yeah.
And then, wow, these tequilas. There was like a gallon of it. Is this your smallest size? I love America.
Listen, if you're staying near Grand Central, you need as much tequila as possible. Just to kill the smell.
Yeah.
But so now, did the guitar player, did he write the words as well as the music?
Yeah, he wrote everything about it.
And
yeah.
Was there a person involved for him? Or what, you know, what's the whole...
Kim usually wrote things for me, so I could sing them from my perspective.
Right.
So I guess he thought maybe I was kind of I think I was the first American that Kim ever knew. And he thought, wow, Americans are really...
Right.
they're so kind of enthusiastic about everything. And I think he just thought that the song would reflect me. And in a way, it's kind of worked the other way, because I'm not really such an enthusiastic person, but it kind of forces me to have to be.
It's it's very up with people, the song. It's and it could be construed as, you know, you're happy that a lover came back, or pathetic that you're just waiting by the mailbox. And
yes, exactly. Yeah. The old mailbox thing. I've never quite figured that one out.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. Now, you're working on a live album now.
Yes. Katrina and the Waves never made a live album, and we were such a kind of, it's one of the things we really love to do, is play live. So the band split up 10 years ago. I've continued to work. I do, most of my work is in Europe and Scandinavia. And I just thought, well, I think I'm going to celebrate the 25th anniversary of Walking on Sunshine with a live album.
Right.
So it's simply called that, the live album. Katrina Laskanich is my last name, but you're forgiven if you don't want to attempt that.
Right.
That's out on June 1st, katrinasweb.com, Facebook, Katrina's
awesome.
Web, Twitter, Katrina's Web.
Your voice still sounds spectacular. I heard you doing vocal exercises.
Yeah.
When I came in, I'm like, Katrina's over there.
I didn't know that. I didn't know they had the microphone turned up, and I didn't realize it was a performance because, you know, I hadn't had my chop suey yet, so it's hard to get warmed up over here.
It's mushu, Katrina.
Oh, mushu. I've never heard of that.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Well, you can have some.
That sounds great. Thanks a lot. You can't say I didn't get anything off this show.
That's right.
So what? Now, do you have any good rock and roll, like any good stuff? Stories from back in the day? Any good gossip?
Well, we supported a lot of other bands. We supported Fleetwood Mac. You've never seen anybody drain a minibar like John McVie.
And
this is why he wore jean jackets with lots of pockets. No, he was wonderful. He would clink when he walked. And he was like, I'm sure he wouldn't mind my saying, because I know the man likes to drink, as I do myself, of course. But he was like a walking minibar, so it was always handy having him on board. And we supported the Beach Boys. We did lots of gigs in the rain. You know, which was always very ironic for us.
Stevie Nicks liked to partake a little bit, as far as I know. I remember she saying, I went to USC, and I remember they did Tusk with the USC marching band.
Yeah.
And I'll never forget, in the homecoming game at halftime, I was looking at my binoculars, and Stevie Nicks was stumbling around the field with a friend of mine, and I was like, what? How did Grace hook up with like, they went drinking, like, all day. And I was like, she was, like, holding a baton and stumbling.
How come you weren't down there? Grace was a friend of yours.
I was like, why wasn't I invited to this?
That didn't pan out.
No, it's
we did a lot of great shows. We did some in Florida with Wham and the Pointer Sisters and Chaka Khan. I mean, that was a hell of a bill.
Wow.
We had a lot of fun there.
Wow.
Yeah, great times.
I love the Pointer Sisters, too.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah.
Another really, really feel-good.
Yes.
Really feel good.
I think it's that up energy of, you know, the songs that, you know, your songs and their songs that just have they just make you happy. They make you sort of, and not only that, it's just great to work out to whatever, right?
And I wonder if musicians feel a little bit embarrassed now. If you were to come up with, for example, I'm So Excited.
Right.
Or A Walking on Sunshine, do you think it would just be too doggone cheesy?
Right. It's not. And it was in the 70s. We didn't care if we were cool.
Yes.
I was a child of the 70s. I'm like, you know, 70s and 80s was you know. But maybe you're right. Maybe there's too much, like, cynicism.
No, I don't think so.
I think Outcast, like Hey Ya, and there's a lot of songs like that.
Yeah,
still
like relatively cheerful songs. They do well.
Black Eyed Peas, don't you think?
Yes, I absolutely agree with you there. I'm just stuck on this, you saying you're a child of the 70s. I think you mean that you were born in 1979, surely.
No, isn't that sweet of her? I like her the best of any rock star I've ever talked
to. Past the Mushy? Mooley?
Mushu.
Mushu, yeah.
No, I grew up in the 70s. I was born in the 60s. Trust me on this, but thank you.
I'm stunned. Wow. I need to eat more broccoli or whatever that is over there. Yeah,
where are you from? Where'd you grow up?
I was born in Topeka, Kansas.
Okay.
My father was in the Air Force, so we lived in California, Florida, Georgia, Alabama, Massachusetts, Nebraska, Germany, Holland. We moved to England in 1976.
Wow. You were running from the law. You can tell me the real story.
Pretty much, yeah.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. The Federal Rockstar Relocation Program?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. That's it.
Yes. And why London now? Why do you live in London?
Well, my dad was stationed in England, and then we put the band together there, which kind of came out of the Catholic choir in a very bizarre way. And so we just stayed because we recorded all of our albums there. A lot of my family lived there, although now my dad moved to Pennsylvania.
Right.
So I kind of divide my time half of it there and half of it here, which is how I managed to maintain this American accent.
And it's good to know something happy came out of the Catholic Church, what with all the news of late.
Yes. We'll draw a discreet veil over the whole Catholic Church, I
right.
think. Yes. And all of the priests.
Now, and how many waves were there, I have to ask, and who are they? Who
there were just four of us. It was okay. Alex Cooper, Kimberly Rue, Vince Dela Cruz, and myself.
Okay. All right. Because I was asked immediately if there were waves with you, and I said no.
No, they crashed on the shore 10 years ago. And I frankly, I'm not quite sure what they're doing, what they're up to.
Did you have a weird reaction with Hurricane Katrina?
Isn't that strange? Oh, that was terribly unlucky. Terrible, yes. Terrible disaster.
You're like,
for
did they have to name it that? That's probably what you were thinking.
Yeah, and I think I felt as if I had to do the right thing and just pretty much go away for a couple of years.
Yeah.
You know,
really?
Because it was very, very tricky to try and promote myself in the reflection of so much sadness.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, I had to just go away for a while.
Oh,
yeah.
Wow.
Oh, that was absolutely awful.
Wow. I never even thought of that. That's really true. Wow. Mm. Katrina, it has just been a pleasure. Thank you so much. And thank you for making such a happy song that I can use as my theme song.
It's absolutely my pleasure. Thank you very much. Have a wonderful day.
All right, take some Mushu with you.
Okay,
you go.
Thank you.
Katrina.
Thank you.
And the waves.
Yes.
She did the owl. All right, 46 minutes after the hour, right back on the Stephanie Miller Show.
It's absolutely perfection.
It's the Stephanie Miller Show. Stephanie Miller.
This is the old bump song that we still had in rotation.
Katrina could not have been, from Katrina and the Waves, could not have been more delightful, may I just say.
She was.
Very, very nice. All right, 51 minutes after the hour, and primarily why? Because she did not ask me for money.
That's true.
Yeah.
And
Chrissy Hynde can't do anything about getting money from Rush Limbaugh for that song, so you know.
Although Chrissy Hynde and Rush Limbaugh did come to an agreement. You heard
did
about
they?
That, right?
No.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. The reason why she's still letting him use her song is that they had a meeting, and it turns out that Rush Limbaugh is a big animal advocate.
Oh.
And so they came to an agreement that he would donate all of the proceeds for using the song to PETA.
Hmm. All right. I haven't heard that.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. How do you get proceeds for using? What does he mean?
Royalties or whatever.
All right.
Yeah, the royalties he would do.
Oh,
he
would have had to pay. I got it. Okay.
Donated
got
to PETA.
Got it. Okay. All right. Celebrity stacks on breaking news this morning. It's not very good. Whitney Houston's been hospitalized.
Yeah, hospitalized in Paris with a quote-unquote upper respiratory infection. Mm-hmm. And so she's canceled the first dates of her European tour.
Okay. Yeah. Mm-hmm. All right. By the by, oh boy, I don't even know what's breaking news anymore about Tiger Woods. But so the Masters has started, right?
Yeah, I think so.
Mm. The Superficial says Tiger Woods banged his neighbor's daughter.
Oh dear.
Tiger Woods allegedly slept with his neighbor's 21-year-old daughter just a few yards away from his own house, according to Radar Online. She's 22 now and recently confronted Tiger when all his mistresses were revealed because she was furious that she was just another conquest. What? There's others? Yes, that must have come as quite a shock to her in that apparently the Inquirer says that they began making out within sight of his house while his wife was home and then had sex at a private office Tiger keeps nearby, according to the National Enquirer. Okay.
Speaking of Tiger Woods, you know who we have on the show tomorrow?
We have an eruption tomorrow.
We have a bimbo eruption.
Now we probably don't have her booked.
Okay. No, we're going to be having Jocelyn James on tomorrow in the first hour. And she's the one who posted all of the sexy texting that she and Tiger did.
Oh.
Yeah. So we can ask her about that.
Is there a way to confirm that it was actually him texting? I guess so. I don't know.
I
Because remember there was the thing about, was this really made up? Because it... It was pretty nasty.
Well, yeah, and I'm, you know, I don't know if people can independently confirm it, but if it ever goes to court and subpoenas are made for, you know, phone records, then it can be confirmed.
Yeah. That's good, because subpoena sounds dirty already. So.
Yeah, but she's going to be on an hour one tomorrow.
Oh, good. Mm-hmm. Well, good then. Good. We'll have to. All right. Jim Carrey and Jenny McCarthy have put their genitals back on the market and split up after 5 years, no. According to a delisted. What?
All right. Take care now. Bye-bye then.
Loser.
All right. And apparently there's no good dirt there so far, Chris, at all, according to delisted.
So far.
And they would know there's no eruptions of any kind. It's just what? A regular breakup in Hollywood? There's no Nazi sex tape? There's nothing?
No Dirty Sanchez?
There's no porn stars? Nothing? All right. Chris, you know, you and I have always been on Team Jen, so this is very exciting breaking news for us. Mm-hmm. Jim Ward, of course, always been on Team Who Gives a F***, which I understand, because he has a life of some sort.
I think I'm there as well.
Really? Oh, no, I will never let go.
You'll never let go of Team Jen?
Yes. In Touch, Jen and Brad caught kissing.
Oh, my God.
Ha! Take that, Team Angelina. In an exclusive interview, Angelina Jolie and Brad Pitt's former bodyguard revealed that since Brad and his ex-wife, Jennifer Aniston, reconnected at the 2009 Academy Awards, they've hooked up four times.
Four.
Three times in L.A. and once in New York, and even recently shared a passionate kiss. I know he still loves her, the ex-bodyguard Bill, who for security reasons chose only to be identified by his first name.
Bill.
Don't you think they probably know who it is?
Probably.
Oh, he's clever, this ex-bodyguard. I'm not going to say who I am. Except that I'm Bill. Oh, that guy. I mean, how many ex-bodyguards do they have named Bill?
Probably
not
many.
Were they all named Bill, so they won't know which one?
That could be. Or maybe the Bill is a pseudonym. Hmm.
All right. A music producer and member of KC and the Sunshine Band has pleaded not guilty in Ohio to charges he has sexual contact with teenage boys.
Oh, dear.
Leave that in the Catholic Church, please. That's not for the KC. But not very sunshiny, is it?
No.
Not a very sunshiny story.
No, it's not.
Okay. I do love me some KC and the Sunshine Band, though, I must say.
Yeah, do it a little dance.
Stephanie Miller.
Making a love.
Make a little love.
It's an alleged, we don't know. See, that's one of those happy 70s bands that I love. And sometimes the things were not so happy and sunshiny happening. But although Katrina seemed all sunshine.
Well, that was the 80s, though. Katrina and the Waves.
Yes. Exactly.
The 80s were all neon. The 70s were all, you know, the Harvest Gold and avocado.
Mm-hmm. Bristol Palin says that if girls knew how tough it was to be a mom, they'd think twice about having sex. The daughter of Governor Sarah Palin says she has chosen to practice abstinence herself now. And she also announced she's becoming the head of the, closing the barn door after the horse is already out foundation.
Right.
Now you're practicing abstinence? All right. And finally, tennis great Martina Navratilova says she has been diagnosed with breast cancer, but her prognosis is excellent, which is good news.
Good.
She said they found a lump in a routine mammogram and a biopsy the following month determined it was a non-invasive cancer. She had a lumpectomy in March and will start 6 weeks of radiation. That's exactly what my mom did.
Yeah.
And she's, you know, knock on wood, doing well so far. So. By the way, I went to Fran Drescher, who we're going to have back on,
yep.
For her Cancer Schmancer organization, cancerschmancer.org. Great organization. You should check it out. There's a lot of early warning signs that she calls them whispers that women should look for that are really helpful in terms of early diagnosis and all that. So
listen to your breasts.
Pardon me?
Listen to your breasts.
Exactly. Well, for someone like me, I can't get anyone else to listen to them. I might as well. Someone has to. All right. It's not just breasts. It's all the lady parts.
Okay. Oh, listen to your lady parts?
Yes. There's whispers. Sometimes your lady parts whisper to you.
The lady part whisper.
It's serious. They're warning signs. They're early warning signs for cancer. Your lady parts whisper, and you must listen. Jim Ward is a lady part whisperer.
I've been
Hello,
known to
Jim.
Be. Hello.
58. I think it's best that we have to break now.
Yes.
58 minutes after the hour. Back with Right Wing World and more as we continue on the Stephanie Miller Show.
ladies and gentlemen, it's the Stephanie Miller Show.
You miss Katrina. She looks good from all that walking on sunshine. Yeah. She's in great shape.
She sounds good.
Great voice. She was delightful.
She was.
Katrina is right next door still from Katrina and the Waves.
Aw.
Aw. 6 minutes after the hour. 1-800-STEPH-12, the phone number. Toll free from anywhere. StephanieMiller.com. Check it out. Mama on MSNBC yesterday up there in the YouTube section. You can email us all there. Executive producer Chris LaVoy, voice deity Jim Ward, associate producer Rebecca Taylor, or me, Stephanie Miller. This hour of the big show brought to you by Carbonite. Love me some Carbonite. I use it to back up my computers. Gives me peace of mind. Don't risk losing your irreplaceable files and photos. Back up your computer today. Do it with Carbonite. Remember, use the offer code Stephanie for my special offer. A 15-day free trial plus 2 months free with any subscription. That's Carbonite.com. Offer code Stephanie.
And if you missed the interview with Katrina, it will be up at StephanieMiller.com in the audio widget within an hour after the end of the show.
Ah, we have an audio widget?
We do.
We have, believe us, we do. We have widgets.
That's remarkable.
It is remarkable and exciting.
You can also subscribe to the bits via iTunes.
All right. So, and speaking of the all the widgets and the you know,
whatever,
and the internets type things. here's another one of these stories out of Arkansas. Oh, I was on a Dr. Phil show once with a nosy mother like this. The mother of a 16-year-old boy said she shut him out of his Facebook account after reading that he had driven home at 95 miles an hour front one night because he was mad at a girl. His response, a harassment complaint at the local courthouse.
Really?
Yes. she said her son, many of her son's postings didn't reflect well on him, so after he failed to log off the social networking site one day last month, she posted her own items on his account and then changed his password to keep him from using it again. New lives with his grandmother, filed a complaint with prosecutors. She said, just because I don't have custody doesn't mean I don't care about
him. Oh, okay, that's
there must
the
be reasons why she doesn't have custody is all I'm saying.
So she's not the legal guardian. Okay, so then she has absolutely no right to go in there.
No, I was on Dr. Phil with a mom like that that pretended to be her daughter or whatever on Facebook. Oh. And, you know.
This goes beyond, Mom, you're embarrassing me.
Exactly. Exactly. I am not for those kind of creepy invasions of privacy is all I'm saying. It's
well,
just,
you're also not a parent.
Whatever.
I'm sure if you were a parent, you'd think differently.
All right. Let's see. Oh, you know what? Who sent us this? Dave. There was some breaking news about Roger, you know, that conservative radio host, Roger Hedgehog.
Cock.
Pardon me, Jim?
Dick Army. What? No.
Oh, no. I'm
Roger
sorry.
Roger Hedgehog.
Hawk.
Cock.
Excuse me.
You keep getting that wrong.
He, let's see, wow, he's been on a tear lately. He first claimed the West Virginia mining disaster is the fault of Democrats who, quote, crave dead miners.
Ooh, what?
Before suggesting that China may have sabotaged the mine. Then he claimed the Ohio man who pled guilty to punching children at Walmart must be an Obama voter because Dems are hostile to children. Okay.
Oh, my God.
That is all from Roger Hedgehog.
Cock.
Oh, you're right this time. Okay.
I think he's off his meds, because that's even
that's
less coherent than normal.
That's irresponsible. That's approaching Glenn Beck territory.
Yeah, that's what everybody's looking at what Glenn Beck makes, right? And they're going thinking, I need to get crazy.
Yeah.
I need that kind of crazy in my bank account.
And I don't think there's anything more dangerous for this country than that kind of rhetoric.
Yeah.
Isn't that some of that actionable?
One would think. One would think that someone could sue Roger Hedgehog.
Cock.
Yeah.
Anyway, can I have my fine American music? You know, before we dive into right-wing world, we've been talking about the conservatives having, they have some sort of Reagan amnesia, don't they, Jim?
Mm-hmm.
Josh Green writes a great piece about this. At the outset of his first term, Reagan's revolution appeared to have unstoppable momentum. His administration passed a historic tax cut based on dramatic cuts in marginal tax rates and began a massive defense buildup. But ever his initial victories on tax cuts and defense, the revolution effectively stalled. Deficits started to balloon. The recession soon deepened. His party lost ground in the 82 midterms, and thereafter, Reagan never seriously tried to enact the radical domestic agenda that he had campaigned on. He made one of the great ideological about-faces in the history of the presidency, agreeing to a $165 billion bailout of Social Security. Almost every way, the bailout flew in the face of conservative ideology. Yeah, what would they call that if Obama did that today, I wonder, Jim?
Treason. Communism. Social Nazi Muslim
ism.
Thank you. It's conservative lore that Reagan the icon cut taxes, yet raising taxes is exactly what Reagan did. He did not always instigate those hikes or agree to them willingly, but he signed off on them. 1 year after his massive tax cut, Reagan agreed to a tax increase to reduce the deficit that restored fully one-third of the previous year's reduction. Reagan, who never came to terms with this episode of ideological contradiction, persuaded himself that the three-year, $100 billion tax hike, the largest since World War II, was actually tax reform. That closed loopholes in his earlier cut and therefore didn't count as raising taxes. Faced with looming deficits, Reagan raised taxes again in 83 with a gasoline tax and once more in 84, this time by $50 billion over 3 years, mainly through closing tax loopholes for business. Reagan raised taxes a grand total of four times just between 82 and 84.
That's inconvenient.
Isn't that?
For the ideologues.
Isn't that?
All right. He wanted to eradicate all nuclear weapons.
Yeah. Very inconvenient.
Something else they don't like to mention.
Exactly.
Well, there you go again. Or there you
mentioning
don't go
things
again.
I actually did. All right, let's dive into the right-wing world, shall we, kids, and see what's doing. Charles Krauthammer on the health care.
It is obvious on the day that health care was signed, we enacted the largest entitlement since the New Deal. We're now reaching levels of the European
since
entitlement
Reagan
state,
and
we're going to have to have
European
levels of taxation.
Yeah, right.
Well, it still couldn't possibly be as high as, Ronald Reagan raised taxes. Just saying. If I ever were invited back on Fox News, which will never happen, Chris, I would just say it at every turn.
Yes.
Really? That's not what Reagan said. We'll just watch heads explode. Left and right.
They've even gone beyond.
Which is why I'm not on Fox News. They've gone so far as to ban anyone
from Fox News
on my show.
Right, exactly.
Wow. Apparently, I've become that dangerous to the Fox empire.
They don't like to debate strong opponents. They only like to have sycophants, sycophant Democrats on there, like Lanny Davis.
Okay. G. When I see this, I just say G. G. Gordon Liddy.
Yeah.
I just saw him at this radio convention here in New York a couple weeks ago, and I might have punched him in the nads if I'd heard him say this.
about
gays in the military.
In the situation where you have separation of the sexes and the sexes are normal people, then you don't have the problem. When you have people who are homosexual and you don't separate them, you can have the same problem as if you did not separate the physical sexes.
Oh, you can't have the gays in with the normal people.
Oh, my God.
You know, I see.
You
can't mix in the convicted criminals either with the normal people, but they do in radio anyway, don't they?
Apparently.
I dare say there were gays in his prison.
You think?
Yeah.
All right, the drug-addled gas bag, Rush Limbaugh, on the left.
What really is going on here is that the forces of the left are in the process of trying to tear down and destroy every institution in America that stands for something other than big government.
And your evidence
other than liberal Democrats. The Catholic Church is despised by the left because of its abortion stance. It is despised because it is a religion other than the earth. It is a religion other than liberalism.
What?
No. That little thing about raping children.
Yeah.
There's that little child raping thing.
You may have read that in the headlines. paying attention.
I see. Okay. So that means, I guess then, Jim, we could extrapolate that Rush is for child rape.
Yes. Clearly. Didn't he go to the Dominican Republic with a suitcase full of Viagra?
I hope that makes Newsbusters later. Okay.
Are you listening, Newsbusters?
That's right.
Stephanie Miller.
Sid Rush is for child rape. Clearly. Okay, Glenn Beck.
Maybe we should give them a clean soundbite without any background music. Go.
Oh. Rush Limbaugh is for child rape.
And
okay.
We're clear.
And
clear.
And scene. Okay.
Just helping out. We're helpers.
We make ourselves chuckle. Glenn Beck on the radio.
We've lived beyond our means far too long. We wanted to take the easy way out far too long. And our country is on the eve of destruction. Whether that be from the Republicans or the Democrats that spend us into oblivion, it is the eve of destruction in America.
I think Glenn Beck has a lot of means. I don't know I don't think he could possibly live beyond his means. They're paying a lot of money for the crazy.
That's what I mean. I think what I hear whenever we play a Glenn Beck clip is just some version of, right? Because you know he's just pulling out of his ass. It's just, how can I sound crazier?
Out of his botched ass.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Okay. Stuart Varney on the Fox and Freaks.
This is the IRS chasing wealthy Americans who may have money overseas. It all comes from that case involving the secret Swiss bank accounts. Mm-hmm. 20,000 Americans had these secret Swiss bank accounts. Nothing illegal about that, but were they declaring the income from those accounts for taxation in America? Answer, probably not. So the IRS, desperate for money, is going after them.
No remain burn. Oh, that's a different Varney. That's right.
Isn't that the IRS's job to go after taxes that are duly owed the United States of America?
Uh-huh.
Here's a weird thought, is that the rich are supposed to pay their taxes just like the poor. See?
Yeah. Like regular people.
And the middle class.
Hmm. Well, the poor don't pay taxes because they have no money.
Okay, but my point is... All right. Laura Ingraham, in for O'Reilly.
Will the campaigner-in-chief sink the Democrats in November? With midterm elections approaching and many Democrats in danger of losing their congressional seats, Team Obama is planning its campaign strategy. So here's the question. Should the president hit the road to rally votes, or will he help the Dems more by staying away?
No.
He's still pretty popular.
Damn popular.
He's still more the most popular politician in the country.
He's going to be even more popular once he goes after the banks, which is coming up.
Yes. Oh, boy. Caribou Barbie to close things out.
If it's open season on us, you know, we're not going to shy away from the message that we have, that we need a smaller, smarter government that is back on the side of the people. And we're going to certainly not retreat. We're going to reload, and we're going to keep standing up for what we believe is right.
And shoot people. In the head. Oops, here did I say it out loud? Ha!
Well, that was a quinky dink that I used that sort of language. Okay. But, Jim, did you see the thing yesterday? Why is she dressed like Stevie Nicks? That's all I want to know. What was that whole deal?
Did you also see Michelle Bachmann congratulated Sarah Palin for breaking that glass ceiling of women running for vice president?
She could break the glass ceiling with her hair. Yeah. What is that, like Anita Bryant hair?
Well, I think
Michelle Bachmann, what is that?
I think Geraldine Ferraro would have something to say about that.
Yeah, exactly.
Running for vice president is
right.
The standard.
What a dope. I'm sorry. I don't mean to be shallow. I was just fixated. She has like that hairdo from, seriously, right? Anita Bryant, very big hair, like the champagne lady on Lawrence Welk, something. Norma Zimmer.
It was up, and I don't think her hair should be up.
It's, that's a lot of teasing.
Yeah.
It's okay. A helmet to protect her from Obama's Kenyan death rays.
All right. That concludes Right Wing World. Wendy is a parent from Chicago, and she wants to say, I am wrong, wrong, wrong as a childless loser. She needs to get all up in her kids' Facebook willy-nilly, and I'm wrong. All right. We will talk to her as we continue. 19 minutes after the hour, right back when I get a talking to by a parent, as we continue on the Stephanie Miller Show.
This whole place just feels like a warm blanket.
It's the Stephanie Miller Show. Stephanie Miller.
Wow, CNN says LA is shutting down. Looks like I got out just in time. You guys hit the lights before you go.
Just LAX. Someone
Thanks
got
for
through
coming.
with a unscreened bag or something.
No, I thought it was a budget thing.
Oh!
Yes.
Oh, no.
LA is officially closed. Get out. Everybody get out.
The mayor's backtracking from that threat.
Oh, all right.
Yeah.
Oh, we're still open?
Worst mayor in history.
No. Yorty was much worse.
Oh, well. I wasn't born for Yorty.
It is. It is the Stephanie Miller Show, 25 minutes after the hour. Craig Crawford, our favorite Chuckley pundit, coming up in just a couple of minutes. In the meantime, Wendy, who has procreated, wants to lecture the childless loser that says I should not be all up in her kid's Facebook. Hello, Wendy.
Oh, good morning. And I'll preface this by saying you are not a childless loser. My single girlfriends are cringing right now. But I do have to take you to task about this. I don't know about the non-custodial parent issue, but as a parent, let me just say, Facebook is a whole different animal. I don't believe in busting into my daughter's room, going through her drawers. I don't believe in reading her diary. And I'm not one of these parents who believes that she needs to pee into a cup every time she comes home at night.
Right.
However, and I know maybe Chris will agree with me because he's quite savvy online and with the social networking. Anything that these teenagers put online, Facebook, you know, MySpace, mm-hmm. Twitter, it's all public domain.
Mm-hmm.
And
yes.
The problem with this, even with the privacy settings, I can still bust into all of her and her girlfriend's pictures and boyfriend's pictures. And sometimes these kids, we have to remember as teens, we were all stupid. Well, they're still stupid in 2010.
Right. We just didn't have the technology then. We just had guys in raincoats with candy. We didn't,
exactly.
We didn't have no stinking internets.
Exactly. But the problem is because they're still stupid and they have these worldwide tools that they can put their life out for the entire globe to see, they just don't think. So what I do is I go through and I see what's being posted. And the problem is with teenagers sometimes is that it is though the you know, the sick, perverted phone calls we used to have with our girlfriends when we were 15,
right.
This is all public domain. They don't talk anymore. It's all on Facebook or texting.
Mm-hmm.
Whatnot.
Yeah, oh, no, listen, Wendy, I did such stupid things. I'm surprised I survived high school. I did some things on spring break in Fort Lauderdale, you know, that were like, why shouldn't I wander down to the beach with this strange guy that I just met?
Well, I'll have her girlfriend say, well, I don't know why these people at this other high school think I'm such a slut. And I'll say, well, maybe if you wouldn't post pictures of yourself simulating fellatio online,
So
this is what we parents deal with. I do allow my children to have social networking, but I do tell them that I need to be their friend. And I do look and see when things do get out of line, because these things follow them because they are public domain. Colleges look at these. Any job prospects look at...
I think I benefited from, you know, my conversations were far too boring because I talked too much, so my parents had no interest in listening in on my fun conversations in high school. We just talked about all the same stuff we talked about all day, you know.
Absolutely. Well, just food for thought.
Wendy, just tell me quickly, since I am a childless loser, so when do you, I mean, when you suspect something, is that when you go on your kid's Facebook, or do you do it all the time? Or
I usually just,
what are the rules?
I'm going through my own sites, I just peruse my daughter's site quickly. And if it's just normal conversation with people, little private jokes, that's fine. But there are times when, especially other people, and she's a freshman, but she has older friends, if they start posting things that I think are really a little too sexually innuendo or truly inappropriate, that I think...
Well,
my daughter,
the other... Right, I was going to say, Wendy, the other big thing in the news these days, I think, is bullying, is that the internet is you know, resulting in a lot of tragic things because it's like a new venue for a different kind of bullying than even we have.
Exactly, and my daughter had an instance, too, where she had a boyfriend, and basically a girl sort of sidled up to the guy, and they started a romance on his wall page before my daughter was broken up with this guy. So
wait a minute, hang on, I'll finish that real quick and then go to Craig Crawford after the break. 29 minutes after the hour, the Stephanie Miller Show.
I never said that
Stephanie Miller
banged her way to the middle, or that
Stephanie Miller
kidnapped a Swedish au pair to use as a hair farm.
It is the Stephanie Miller Show. Talking to Wendy in Chicago real quick before we move on. Hey, Wendy, you're the parent that said you check your daughter's Facebook. Because we were talking about the Internet. I mean, the big thing right now is that it seems to be used for bullying in a way that it wasn't when we were growing up, right?
It absolutely is. It's extremely easy and extremely cowardice to sit at your computer as a teen and bully someone else from the comfort of your own home.
Yeah, Carol Fisher had to actually go to the Y to beat me up back in the 70s. You know, you had to get out of your chair. But you were saying your daughter was dating a guy. What happened with that?
Last year, she was dating a boy, And they had a relationship for about, you know, she was 14 at the time, so 2 months was a pretty long relationship. Mm-hmm. She knew something was wrong but couldn't quite put her finger on it. Well, she goes on to her Facebook and this other girl's Facebook and has seen that they have been exchanging publicly, not even live chatting where things can be private, but they've exchanged things on each other's wall very publicly about their love for one another and, you know, some sexual innuendos, whatnot. And so it was very apparent to me that they wanted her and other people to find out that they were starting this relationship, but in such a cowardly way that it was so hurtful because other people had also found out about this before my daughter actually found out, because everything was public. And as a parent, I don't know how to handle this because I have no point of reference for my own teenhood. You know, we just had rumors and, you know, three-way calling or something if you were really fancy back then in the 70s. But I tell my daughter daily, you know, what you're going through, I'm learning on the job, because this is a whole new animal, this internet.
And you've been talking to me far too long. It's time to go snooping into your daughter's Facebook account.
Time to go creeping, as they call it.
Yes,
exactly. Bye, creepy parent. Thanks for calling.
Have a good one.
So glad I don't have kids.
Yeah, me neither. I don't have the energy for that. I'm like, oh, whatever is going on the internet. All right. As somebody whose Facebook account I would never break into and change his password without his consent is Craig Crawford, because I love him so dearly, and he's one of my very favorites. The author of Listen Up, Mr. President, co-authored with Helen Thomas. Good morning, Craig.
Hello there. Hey, I've got a Facebook page. Let's wall-to-wall sometime.
There you go, yeah.
I
got the Twitter, I got the Facebook, I got it all. I don't understand it, but I'm doing it.
Exactly. The one thing you write about is how Brian Lamb believes in the importance of not screening callers.
All right.
I love your C-SPAN piece, despite being inundated with hilarious crank calls.
Yeah. I mean, I love the C-SPAN callers. I mean, I keep telling them I wish they would give them webcams, because I'd like to see them in their bathrobes when they're ranting. I think that'd be scary.
Yeah, exactly.
They'd have to screen that.
But exactly.
I did a video, a web video interview for congress.org, where I do weekly videos, and before that latest episode where this racist caller called in and complained about too many black callers on C-SPAN and told them they ought to call it Black Span, and they let the guy go. And I actually talked to Brian the week before that, and it's been an ongoing debate about C-SPAN callers that they don't screen them. And he explained the philosophy that it's a people's channel and anything goes, and it's politics, and they just don't screen. He said they only screen for if you're drunk or incoherent.
Well, Craig, what do you think of this whole, I love them trying to deny that there is any racist element to the Tea Parties and all of that. And we have, you know, actual audio with, you know, callers using the N-word for Democratic congressmen on their machines. We have now, you know, death threats against Nancy Pelosi and Patty Murray. These guys have been arrested. I don't know if you saw this, but the guy's mother, who was arrested in the Nancy Pelosi thing, blamed Fox News. She said that's what gets him worked up. You know, he's obviously a nutcase.
Yeah, I mean, there's clearly some of that with the group. Now, I've gone to some of their things, and I got to tell you, there are a lot of reasonable people there, and they do have an argument. I mean, the weird thing about the Tea Parties to me is that they actually have kind of a mainstream argument that a lot of Americans agree with, which is that there's too much spending in government, and government's growing too much, but they're, you know, sort of the reason of their argument gets lost by some of these people. I don't like, you know, portraying groups based on certain individuals anymore. You know, like the Code Pink woman who interrupted Karl Rove's speech. You know, Rove immediately used her to portray the entire left as totalitarian. You know, I mean, that kind of. I mean, it's like if a Martian. Mm-hmm. If a Martian came down to Earth and the first thing he saw about Americans was Shriners parades, he'd think we all wear funny hats and drive tiny cars, you know?
Yeah. Well, you know, it's just, you know, you saw this, I'm sure, Sarah Palin and Michelle Bachmann yesterday. And
yeah.
Sarah Palin just continues to use this rhetoric about reloading and, you know, yeah. having crosshairs across Democratic candidates on her website. I mean, you know, and it, obviously in many cases it is leading to actual violence or threats yeah. of violence, isn't it?
I think they're doing their opponents a great favor because, you know, it is... With that kind of rhetoric, it makes them look lunatic fringe when a lot of their argument is something most Americans would agree with, but they shoot themselves in the foot.
Yes. To use further gun violence humor.
Talk. Yeah.
Yes. Well, you know, but to me, that's what I was saying. I've been saying earlier is that, you know, it sure is dressed up in a pretty package. You can't deny these are two, you know, very good looking women. But I think the rhetoric is, like you just said, it really is kind of lunatic fringe what comes out of their mouths, isn't it?
Yeah. And I think the dynamic here where I see it all helping Democrats in the fall is that Democrats need to get the independent voters back. I mean, that's the main thing they've lost since the presidential election, that centrist voters who, and what happens is usually Democrats can get those voters back if they scare them about where the Republicans are headed. If they make the Republicans right. look like nutcases that are going to drive us off a cliff or something, that's when independents get scared of Republicans. And
right.
this is what's playing into their hands right now.
Right.
I think.
Well, and I think the other thing is, you know, it's interesting. I was on Larry King, I think it was last week, with that.
Yeah, I saw that. It was great.
The Republican,
yeah.
oh, Nancy Pfotenhauer. The Republican strategist, and she said to me, oh, Stephanie, I think we're all done blaming George Bush now. And according to this new Harris poll,
no,
Craig, Americans are not done blaming yeah. George Bush. He gets more blame for the country's economic troubles than
he... And they're still blaming Jimmy Carter, and what was that 30, 40 years ago?
yes. For the country's economic troubles than his successor or the Democrats who control Congress, according to a Harris poll, 31% say Bush deserves the most blame. Second place, Wall Street, by 6 percentage points. So, you know, and the Democrats and the president down to, you know, at 16 or 14% or something. So
well,
I
know,
think Americans largely get it that we didn't get here overnight in this economy.
Well, yeah, I wrote this book with Helen Thomas about the presidency, and we just flat out say that, you know, that George Bush was the worst president of modern times, at least. And we say that at our events. We do a lot of speaking and you know, we don't get a lot of argument about that.
Right.
And we talked to a lot of, you know, balanced groups, not just Democrat or left. I mean, I think a lot of people are looking back on that presidency right now, and even people who mildly supported it at the time are realizing a lot of the mistakes that were made.
Well, yeah, but I mean, even when you talk about the Tea Parties, Craig, a lot of the things they're protesting are things George Bush did, you know,
yeah.
not Barack Obama.
I know, when they talk about growth of government, which is, you know, their big beef, I mean, we've got two presidents in a row, and Bush has definitely led the way and who grew government. I mean, he grew it to the right, mostly, with military and homeland security spending, but it grew, and
right.
and a little and a tad to the left with the Medicare expansion of prescription drugs, and now we've got a president who's growing it in all directions. I mean, he's spending
right.
$2 billion a month more in Iraq and Afghanistan than Bush did.
Mm-hmm. Now, you know, we've been talking about, though, I mean, next up, I think, is financial reform. And again, speaking of polling, of course, Americans largely for that. And as you know, Republicans will be against it. How do they, you know, fight that fight except to...
Well, that's tough. I mean, defending Wall Street is going to be a dicier argument for them. I think they might shy away from it. What they're focusing on is sort of the public option of this debate, which they did kill in the health reform debate, is this consumer protection agency that will be empowered to deal with a lot of these scams that are out there and a lot of the really crazy, you know, high interest rates, you know, really enforcing a lot of what a lot of people don't realize is we have a lot of these laws to prevent that sort of, you know, abusive credit practices, but there really isn't a strong enforcement agency for it. And that is,
right.
I think, the critical thing in this bill that's going to be the real flashpoint that Wall Street's fighting tooth and nail, which tells you it means something. It's a worthwhile proposal if they're
mm-hmm.
fighting it that hard.
Mm-hmm. Craig, does Michael Steele survive? It seems like it's more bad news every day. So
yeah.
fundraising, not good. 6. The RNC raised $11 million, though it was able to sock away just $2 million. That means carry the 4. That means $9 million for lesbian bondage acts, apparently.
Yeah. Well, it's the money. I think with Republicans, if they're losing money, that's where they're going to get focused. Like they always say, Democrats argue about sex and Republicans argue about money. In this case, I think he's in trouble because he actually raised about $100 million, but they've spent so much of it. They're going into this midterm election with $10-12 million in the bank or something. That's about a third of what the RNC usually.
And they're running as the fiscal conservatives, right?
First thing he did was spend $18,000 on his office.
I know. Ridiculous. Well, I hope he stays in. Craig, you are, of course, the author of Listen Up, Mr. President, with our very favorite Helen Thomas as well. Thanks, as always, for your time. We enjoy it.
Yeah, we'll be up there in New York Monday, April 26th at a restaurant there on Fifth Avenue.
I-L-I-L-I. I will come out because I would do anything to do some Jello shots with you and Helen Thomas.
You bet. Yeah, it's a cocktail party. Starts at 5, and then we do a little song and dance and sign some books. So
I'll come on by and say hey. Thank you, Craig.
All righty. So long.
All right, there he goes, Craig Crawford.
Michael Steele should know better than to buy office supplies at a liquor store.
Yeah.
You know, you can try to shove a bottle of Goldschläger into your printer, but it's just not going to fit like the cartridge will.
Trust Jim. He's tried it. 46 minutes after the hour. Right back with the latest on the mining disaster and much more as we continue on the Stephanie Miller Show.
They degrade women and beavers.
It's the Stephanie Miller Show. Stephanie Miller.
It is the Stephanie Miller Show, 50 minutes after the hour. Kevin in D.C., you're on the Stephanie Miller Show. Welcome. Hi, Kev.
Good morning, lovely Stephanie.
Good morning, baby.
You know, just as an aside, I was calling about the ridiculous Virginia governor, but, you know, you mentioned that...
Oh, it's Confederate History Month, you know.
Yeah, you know, you mentioned that woman that you won with Larry King last week.
Nancy...
How you say her name?
And Hauer.
It's not important, but she just reminded me that she, to a black CNN anchor during the McCain-Obama campaign, she said that real American thing. He mentioned that the Obama was ahead in Virginia. He said, well, I'm not worried about it because the real Americans, you know, the people that are going to vote for him are in Northern Virginia. In other words, you know, the ethnics. The real Americans will pull it through. The black anchor looked at her like she was crazy, and then he said, I'm not going to touch that and conclude the interview. And that just lines up to this Virginia governor. Why won't Republicans let us evolve? That's what the human race needs to do. And this guy, he said, I didn't mention the slavery thing. I mean, it was just a...
Oh, and then he made it worse. Did you see? He said slavery wasn't significant enough to be included in the proclamation honoring the Confederacy.
He has since backtracked. He's since backtracked from that statement and is now going to include slavery in his proclamation.
Yeah,
so.
He did, but it only took him a week.
Right.
But I mean, he may have a point. It was just a minor unpleasantness, people not being able to do
exactly
anything.
That's how he would... I think he would like to put that in the proclamation. He would like to refer to it as the minor unpleasantness.
In the War of Northern Aggression.
That's right.
In which the South attacked Fort Sumter.
Huh?
Huh? What?
Hold on. Hold on to your Confederate money, boys. The South will rise again.
Yeah, I love that he quietly declared April Confederate History. He didn't think anyone would notice this? Yes, notably absent any mention of slavery. He explained at the time, Chris, it was not significant enough to merit a mention. He said he didn't include a reference to slavery because there are any number of aspects to that conflict between the states.
Oh,
obviously, it involved slavery. It involved other issues.
Sure, like...
But I was focused on the ones I thought were most significant for Virginia.
The price of corn liquor.
That was part of it. Yes. So now he's apologized? He's backtracked?
He's backtracked from that.
He is going to mention the minor unpleasantness?
Yes, he will.
Okay, let's go to Steve in Kansas. You're on the Stephanie Miller Show. Hello, Steve.
Hi, first-time caller.
Okay, then.
Enjoy the show immensely, by the way. And if, I'll let you in on a secret. I work at a radio station, and we play the Dennis Miller Show, but I'm listening to you.
Oh,
hooray!
I don't blame you. All right.
I enjoy your show tremendously. I want to comment on the Freak Fest yesterday in Minneapolis, the Two Shrew Review, if you will.
Yes.
How come Ms. Bachman did not hold this rally in her own district? It was not held in the 6th district. I used to live there back in the day, and where she was holding the rally yesterday was actually in Representative Ellison's district. I can't understand why.
Wow.
If I lived in the 6th district, I'd be really PO'd at that.
Wow. I have no idea.
Yeah, she needs to be holding her events in her own district. Huh.
Yeah, I don't. Where do you even start with that whole freak fest? Sarah Palin yesterday at the Bachman Palin Overdrive.
We want a system that expands choices and freedom and competition. We want a system that we can afford, not another new entitlement program that breaks the bank and really violates much of our Constitution.
What? I'm sorry.
How?
What else?
Uh-huh.
That is what it sounds like.
Yeah.
Everything she says, and why must I'm continually forced to go on TV? And Stephanie, let's take a look at what Sarah Palin said yesterday.
Same thing.
That's what
said
it all
before.
Sounds to me. Yeah. I'm like, is there anything different? Let me guess. Is it screechy? Whatever she's gonna say. Okay. Once
the only thing that goes to the floor is a dead fish.
Oh, boy. Here's more Sarah Palin from yesterday.
She's standing up. She's speaking out. She's offering common sense conservative solutions to the challenges our country faces. And when the left tries to push through policies that violate our conscience and our values and our Constitution, it's Michelle who is trying to get them to halt. Michelle doesn't just tell them no. She tells them H-E-L-L no.
And
she double hockey sticks.
Golly, I spelled it out because we're conservatives and we don't talk dirty.
It's a bad word.
H-E double toothpicks, everybody.
Hockey sticks.
Whatever.
Well, since she's from, since she's a hacky man.
Oh, God, I do get a twitch in my eye. Can you see that on the Skype, Chris?
Yeah,
I twitch from listening to
the healthcare bill has passed. You're not going to revoke
repeal
it.
Good luck there. Bat Crazy Bachman said, 2 years from now, President Obama will be a one-term president because we're going to elect the boldest, strongest, most courageous, rock-ribbed, constitutional conservative president this country has ever seen. Did she mention who?
No.
Who is she talking about? Somebody rock-ribbed.
It's a
who's
robot.
Rock-ribbed?
They're going to build a robot with rock ribs.
A rock-ribbed constitutional.
Someone from the Flintstones, apparently.
Yeah. Mr. Slate.
You could get a picture with both of them for $10,000, Jim.
Or you could go to Terrell Clark's website and put your own picture in there and get a picture with them for free.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
There you go. Terrell Clark for Congress. Do it. Okay. That's Charles in Los Angeles on the Virginia governor. Hello, Charles.
Yes. The governor should rescind this proclamation. First of all, it's the Southern Confederate, Sons of the Confederate Veterans that approached him. That's the group that Joe Wilson belongs to. And one of those leaders actually is married to the head of that neo-Nazi group, Aryan Nations.
Wow.
So those are the kind of people that the governor is dealing with. And, as far as the Confederates themselves, they took up arms against this country. That's the greatest act of treason. You had a handful of rich white plantation owners convinced the masses of poor whites to rise up against this country. Mm-hmm. Almost sounds like what's going on today.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Don't you love him trying to spin? Oh, well, there were other issues. No.
No.
The Civil War was about slavery. That's what it was about.
In fact, one of those secessionists, he said there wouldn't be a Southern civilization without African slavery.
Yep, absolutely.
There would have been no White House without the African slaves.
No Capitol building.
Yeah.
Exactly. You know what? In fact, they should have called it the Black House, don't you think, Charles? I mean, just out of respect for the people that actually built it.
Yeah, you're right.
I mean, insult to injury. Thanks for building it. Now we're going to call it the White House. Oh, just saying. All right, 58 minutes after the hour, back with the latest on the mining disaster and much more as we continue on the Stephanie Miller Show.
Gentlemen, it's the Stephanie Miller Show.
Minutes after the hour. 1-800-STEP-1-2, that phone number, toll free from anywhere to join the party. StephanieMiller.com. Check it out. Come live blog with us. Tweet me, won't you? Or you can email us the old-fashioned way. Executive producer Chris LaVoie, voice of deity Jim Ward, associate producer Rebecca Taylor, or me, Stephanie Miller. All right, we've been saying, president and the Russian president, Medvedev. Signed the biggest nuclear arms pact in a generation, and somehow, magically, all the conservatives seem to have Reagan amnesia.
Yeah.
Because... I don't know. Suddenly this is socialistical and communistical. And, you know, we thought, how about if there was someone who was, Secretary of, Assistant Secretary of Defense under, let's just say, Ronald Reagan. That might remember a thing or two about a thing or two.
Hypothetically.
Larry Korb from the Center for American Progress. Good morning, Larry.
Good morning.
Thanks so much for taking time for us, as always.
My pleasure.
You must just be shaking your head. You must be having a series of Scooby-Doo moments when you watch the... Republicans today talk about how wrong this is when this is exactly what Reagan espoused, right?
Well, in fact, Reagan went further. He was willing to give up all nuclear weapons, and the only thing that kept them was the same thing that bothers the Russians these days, the whole question of missile defense. But they were at Reykjavik. They were, you know, agreed to give up everything, and then Gorbachev said, well, you got to promise not to build missile defense, and Reagan said no. And it's really interesting, when Reagan was negotiating with Gorbachev, and Newt Gingrich called him Neville Chamberlain. And, you know, and people forget, you go back to the first arms, you know, significant arms agreement was Richard Nixon. The next one was under Gerald Ford. Then, you know, Reagan got rid of all intermediate nuclear weapons in Europe. And they would have had a START agreement. Actually, Jesse Helms held it up in the last year of Reagan's administration. And then, of course, the first President Bush concluded the START agreement in 1991. It's basically been Republicans who've been doing this up until now.
Right. Well, Larry, what do you think is happening in terms of, I mean, we were just saying, you know, Sean Hannity has a new book out, Why I'm a Reagan Conservative, and you go through almost each and everything in terms of, you know, tax increases, in terms of nuclear agreements, in terms of deficit spending, and they're not Reagan conservatives today, are they?
No, they're not. I mean, you know, for example, as I wrote, you know, when at the height of this foolishness in Iraq, when, you know, things, you know, turned out not the way we thought. When we worked for Reagan, you know, after Lebanon, we had the Marines killed. He recognized we had an impossible mission, and we left. And, you know, he was a very, very practical man. And, you know, when he recognized that Gorbachev was a new type of Soviet leader, you know, he didn't say, well, gee, I just don't negotiate with the Soviets. In fact, it was great irony. The neocons kind of trapped them into this idea about these intermediate nuclear weapons. The Russians had deployed theirs. We were trying to deploy them in Europe. So the neocons said, well, why don't you make this deal with Gorbachev? We won't, you know, put ours in if you take yours out. And the Russians kind of said, well, wait a second. That's not quite, you know, fair. We don't know if you're going to get yours in because there's some resistance in Europe. Once it became clear the Europeans were going to let us do it, the Russians said, okay, we'll take ours out. You know, don't go ahead and put yours in. And then the neocons said, no, no, we don't agree with it, because they never thought that the Soviets would accept that.
Right, right. Well, I mean, talk to us about, Larry, about this new agreement. I mean, it seems to me pretty unprecedented, but also, you know, kind of resets relations, doesn't it, between the U.S. and Russia?
Oh, it does. And I mean, you know, actually, it's a good agreement for both sides, because it helps President Obama deal with the whole question of, you know, proliferation and countries like Iran and North Korea trying to get them because we're saying, hey, we're, you know, cutting down the number of nuclear weapons, so that enhances our moral authority. It's also good for the Russians. Their nuclear weapons were beginning to decay. This gives them, you know, a rationale to cut, which they probably would have had to do, you know, anyway. So it's good for, you know, it's good for both sides. And actually, if you look at the numbers, they're not much different than what, you know, the second President Bush negotiated, the so-called Moscow Treaty, which wasn't, you know, formally ratified, but that basically the numbers weren't that much, you know, different. This is 1,550. The, under Bush, it was like between 1,700 and, you know, 2,200. I think what it is, they just don't want to give Obama credit for anything. I think if he got up there and said, you know, we're going to make Mother's Day 2 days instead of one, they would vote against it.
Yes, exactly. I mean, that really is stunning, the number of things that he has done, the exact same thing Reagan did. And, you know, Reagan's their hero, and Obama is a socialist antichrist, apparently.
Well, and that's true. And, I mean, I haven't read Hannity's book. I wouldn't waste my money on it. But, you know, the thing that it's amazing, people forget that Reagan had the biggest tax cut, biggest tax increase in 1984 to save Social Security. I mean, most people pay more in Social Security taxes than regular taxes, and that was, you know, that was Reagan, and he realized he had to do that or Social Security was going to go bankrupt.
Yep.
And then, of course, Clinton had provided, you know, a measure of, you know, a surplus there, and then Bush spent it. So now the Social Security, we're paying, this is the first year they're going to be paying more out than they're taking in.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. Well, you know, I guess let me ask a stupid layperson question, Larry, because I don't understand, you know, the whole nuclear thing, I suppose, like, you know, a lot of experts do. But what is the right wing argument? I mean, isn't it clear, like, we don't need enough to blow the world up four times over? Like, what's the point of having
that? Well, the two things are going to hang their hats on. One is this whole question about missile defense, because the Russians wanted to make part of the agreement that we wouldn't build a missile defense system. And the missile defense system is, for Republicans, that's kind of a litmus test of loyalty to the Reagan legacy, because he was the one who, you know, came up with this idea. Well, that's taken care of in the treaty, because we say, hey, we reserve the right to do it, and the Russians say we reserve the right to get out of the treaty, which you can do. I mean, Bush got out of the anti-ballistic missile treaty, so I mean they'll make a big thing about that. The other is the nuclear posture review, which came out on Tuesday of this week, where, you know, Obama's, you know, try to limit the, you know, the occasions we would use nuclear weapons. In other words, we wouldn't use them against a non-nuclear power who signed the non-proliferation treaty. They're going to argue, well, you shouldn't take any options off the table. But even then, there's enough, you know, ambiguity in there where Obama says, well, you know, I will, you know, situation change, I'll obviously change my policy.
Mm-hmm.
It's really a question. They just don't want to give him credit for anything, particularly in this, you know, era, which up to now, interestingly enough, has been the province of Republicans. They're the ones who've had the arms control agreements.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I have to ask you, because I don't know if you know, my dad ran with Barry Goldwater in 64. And
I remember it. I remember it well. And the reason he was picked is because Lyndon Johnson hated him, and they thought that Johnson might blow up during the campaign.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. You know, Larry, but I guess my point is that, you know, I'm certainly not the only person saying this isn't my dad and Goldwater's party anymore. Were you a Republican when you worked in the Reagan administration?
Oh, yeah. I was attracted to the Republicans, you know, under Eisenhower and Nelson Rockefeller. And even the late Senator Goldwater and I, in 1993, we both supported Clinton on dropping the ban on gays in the military. And Goldwater had this wonderful saying, which I've quoted in a lot of stuff that we've written at the center: I don't care if a person's straight, can they shoot straight?
Yep.
I mean, and that, you know, to me, I met Senator Goldwater a couple of times. I found him great. He was so honest. You know, I didn't agree with all of his, you know, positions, but he was honest and he was straightforward. He didn't get into all this social stuff. I mean, my goodness.
Yep. In fact, that was one of my dad's main jobs, as you recall, in the 64 campaign, is he had to explain what Goldwater meant by the small tactical weapon that you could carry in a suitcase or something. He had to keep, like, you know, every speech started with, here's what Barry meant to say about that.
Well, you know, I got to tell you a funny story since you mentioned that. I was in the service at the time, and we were deployed overseas. And in 64, I'd say the majority of us voted for Goldwater.
Right.
And in 65, we were up to our eyeballs in Vietnam. I remember one of the guys said, see, they told us last year, if you vote for Goldwater, we're going to escalate in Vietnam. Which,
yeah.
of course, you know, Johnson did.
Yes.
Far beyond, I think, anything Goldwater ever done. I mean, we had 540,000 people there.
Yep. Yep, I know. Unbelievable. Well, I mean, but that's what I'm saying is I think that, you know, today it's a perfect example, whether it's this, you know, nuclear agreement, whether it's the deficits, whether it's tax cuts. It's like, you know, we were joking yesterday. We're saying, like, Reagan would be a Reagan Democrat today.
Well, he would. I mean, and I guess it has to do with where the electoral base is now. I mean, you don't have any, except for the, you know, Collins and Olympia Snowe from Maine. There's no Republicans in New England. You know, where are the, you know, Senator the Javits, for example? And you know, people like that, Senator Brooke from, you know, Massachusetts, they, you know, they're not there anymore. There's not a single member of the House of Representatives who's a Republican from all of New England.
Yep, yep, absolutely. And now, what's the latest thing the president has in terms of this Muslim leader? I'm trying to think. You know, I'm just laughing because you know there's so much a large percentage of these Tea Parties that think he's a Muslim. You
yeah.
know, I'm thinking that must have really confused them that he put out a hit on a Muslim cleric. It's well,
yeah. Well,
but, I mean,
this is the cleric who, you know, is an American who now lives in Yemen, who, you know, the evidence is pretty clear that he's encouraged the, you know, the shoe bomber and then Major Hassan, the one who, you know, had those horrible killings down at Fort Hood.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, it seems to me that, you know, the president on foreign policy is, you know, doing exactly what he campaigned on, and that is fighting a tougher but smarter, you know, war against terror and just, you know, foreign policy. Do you agree?
Oh, sure. Well, I mean, it's very interesting because I worked for Obama in the campaign. I remember reading that speech where he was going to increase the drone attacks on, you know, Pakistan. And, you know, he's done that. That's where they're hiding out. You know, he also said, you know, that, you know, Afghanistan is more important than Iraq. And the great irony is that, you know, even though the Republicans criticized him for it, Bush signed an agreement before he left office, said we're going to get out of Iraq by the end of 2011.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I mean, he is doing what he said. Now, it's interesting. I think a lot of people did not read the campaign because I know that people say, well, why is Obama escalating in Afghanistan? I said, well, he said he was going to do that in the campaign.
I know.
People didn't
I know.
Pay attention to that. They were just like, he's going to get us out of Iraq and, you know, stop
yep.
quote-unquote.
I said the same thing. Yeah, that this is not a surprise. And I wasn't even Assistant Secretary of Defense under Ronald Reagan. Larry Korb, current fellow at the Center for American Progress. Larry, thanks so much. We always enjoy it. Thank you.
Okay,
so much.
Good to be with you.
All
Take
right,
care.
You too,
Bye.
Sir. There he goes. Lawrence Korb from the Center for American Progress.
I like him. Bet Hannity's not going to get him as a guest.
I don't think so. He would say things that would make Sean shake that little tiny tic-tac brain in his giant brontosaurus head.
But how can you... But Reagan said, what? No.
Don't ruin my man crush. 19 minutes after the hour, back with the latest on the mining disaster as we continue on The Stephanie Miller Show.
That was strangely arousing.
It's The Stephanie Miller Show. Stephanie Miller.
Not much thought went into those lyrics.
Really?
Yeah.
Damn kids with their Facebook and space pages.
24 minutes after the
talk.
Hour. 1-800-STEPH-12, the phone number, toll free from anywhere. Yeah, that's the main thing, Chris, why I'm not qualified to be a parent. I'm completely technologically impaired.
Yeah.
I wouldn't even have any idea how to break into your Facebook page or snoop or do anything.
You have no idea how to tweet either.
Sure I do. I just tweeted.
Uh-huh. What'd you tweet?
D in Atlanta, you're on the Stephanie Miller Show. Welcome.
You know what? You guys are too freaking funny. I'm up in the ceiling trying to replace my ceiling fan. I'm fooling around with the wires. All of a sudden, I hear this screech. And I'm thinking, it's the birds, man. It's the birds from that movie.
Yeah.
With the birds up in the attic, and I almost fell through the ceiling. Are you crazy?
No, it's just Sarah Palin talking again.
you guys are funny, but can you give a brother an opportunity when you do that so I won't fall through the ceiling again, please?
All right, look out. Sarah Palin's talking. All right.
We want a system that expands choices and freedom and competition.
Don't fall.
We want a system that we can afford, not another new entitlement program that breaks the bank and really violates much of our Constitution.
Uh-oh. I wouldn't work with anything electrical when someone, sure. when you hear warning from a radio or TV announcer, they're playing a Palin clip. Mike in Minneapolis, you're on the Stephanie Miller Show. Hi, Mike.
Hello. I thought I would call up. I'm your stagehand from North Minneapolis, and I remember the Blue State Ball when that light standard almost went over.
Went into
a total panic. But I wanted to point out to your earlier caller, he should not be too surprised that Michelle Bachmann is in the 5th District campaigning and looking for funding and money, because she never campaigns in the 6th district. She's always holding her fundraisers either in the 5th or in the 3rd, which is a very wealthy Republican area there. You see, there really is no money in the 6th district.
That's because Michelle Bachmann is their congressperson, ironically enough. Yes. All right, honey. Thank you. She doesn't want her poor constituent slob's money. She needs to go get money from somewhere richer, somewhere that has a really good congressperson, and there might be a better employment rate. All right. Here's some good breaking news, finally. Fruits and vegetables prevent cancer? Not so much.
Oh.
Time to go back to the bacon and vodka diet.
Yay! What?
A huge 9-year study of diet and cancer involving nearly 500,000 Europeans in 10 countries finds only very weak association between intake of fruits and vegetables and cancer incidence. So, you know, the only studies I read from now on, Chris, are the ones you send me that involve more wine.
Yep.
More wine.
And bacon.
Mm. No, bacon, just wine.
Just wine?
Prevents cancer.
Bacon-flavored wine.
Thinner and
smarter. Bacon-flavored wine.
I just saw a study that the women are smarter that drink wine, so there.
What?
But your muscles are confused.
Yeah.
Exactly. If you want to be smarter but have confused muscles,
what?
I recommend wine and P90X, my friends. All right. Speaking of the drunk stack, a heavily intoxicated man urinated on himself early yesterday, stripped off his clothes, and broke into a home he thought was his. He was only off by about 46 miles.
Oh, Robert Downey's in trouble again.
No, he's fine. He's fine. He's got a new movie coming out this summer.
Mm-hmm. Ooh, drunk stack part two. Two drunk fishermen were saved from a crocodile-infested river after their boat flipped over, only to hurl a four-letter tirade of abuse at their rescuers.
Oh, no.
The men were left, helpless in the middle of a river known for the size and number of its crocodiles after their boat flipped over. These guys weren't capable of swimming, let alone driving a boat, said one rescuer. The one guy under the boat had a lure stuck in his calf.
Oh, jeez.
Hate that.
Was this in Australia, Bonnie Chase?
Yes, it was.
Yeah, only a few beers were saved during the rescue. He said the man started screaming when he told he couldn't take his beer cans into the pub.
Save the bloody beers, mate!
Exactly. He was saved from being eaten by a crocodile, but if you can't save the beers...
No. What point is there?
It's no good. It's no good. You might as well just left them there. Mm-hmm. All right. I have some not-so-fun facts about coal, and we will also be back with all of the latest on this mining disaster and the CEO of the mining company as we continue on the Stephanie Miller Show.
This strong, foxy lady is
Stephanie Miller.
And it's who I love.
34 minutes after the hour, it is the Stephanie Miller Show on the radio. If you want to see a live girl, come see Stephanie Miller's Sexy Liberal Show here in New York City on April 17th, starring Hal Sparks and John Fugelsang. Tickets are going fast, I'm told, Christopher Lavoie.
There are only a few tickets left, like in the tens.
Zoinks!
In
wow.
the tens, yes.
Zoinks! Mm-hmm. It's after one day, for God's sakes.
Yes.
All right, it's at the WNYC Green Space Theater here in New York City, April 17th. It will be filmed for television, I understand.
Wow.
Yes. So it's there's a banner ad right up on StephanieMiller.com.
Yep. Yep.
If you are in New York City or you will be in the New York City area, coming out and see the Stephanie Miller Sexy Little Show.
Will you be writing the show on a cocktail napkin five minutes before you go on stage?
Yes.
Yes. So. Even though it's going to be on television?
I know. I just said that to someone today. I was like, oh, it's next weekend?
Wait a minute. It really is next weekend, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Holy crap.
Yes, it will be live comedy and music and panel and special guests and the Flavin.
And the Flavin.
Uh-huh. Okay. Lori in Chicago, you're on the Stephanie Miller Show. Welcome, Lori.
Hi, Steph. This is regarding Palin and Bachman and their pontificating on nuclear arms. And it also ties into the 1964 election, which I think you're familiar with, sort of.
Yes, yes. Equally disastrous.
Yes. Well, do you remember the little girl in the Daisy ad?
Yes.
How that frightened everybody? Well, mm-hmm. I think campaign footage of Sarah and Michelle and Hannity pontificating on nuclear arms in this country should be used as campaign footage. I think that's almost as frightening as the Daisy girl.
Yes, exactly. All right. Thank you, Laurie. I appreciate it. Yeah, and I mentioned that, Chris. If my father said it once, he said it a million times at dinner. I wish that we could blow up more little girls with daisies. I know, Dad. Blah, blah, blah. Pass the gravy.
That was an effective ad, though.
Yep.
It really was.
Yeah.
It sunk your father's
extremism
campaign.
Extremism and defense of liberty is no vice. Well, wait a minute.
Wait a minute.
How extreme we talking?
Yeah.
Huh?
I remember one political pundit at the time said that when he Goldwater said that, he rocked back in his chair and he said, holy, Goldwater's running as Goldwater. This isn't going to be good. All right. Here are some not-so-fun facts, Jim, about coal.
Mm.
Let me just... Okay, Scott. Mm-hmm. Here we go. 714 pounds of coal it takes to power one light bulb 24 hours a day for a week. 45% of our electricity is powered by coal. Something to think about as we once, again, mourn the loss of coal miners. That, according to our friend Craig Crawford, who we just had on earlier today.
Dirty fuel, and it takes a lot of destruction to get at it, especially when they tear off mountaintops. And we keep killing people.
The first time I heard clean coal, it sounded like jumbo shrimp to me.
Yeah.
I was
kind of
like, I don't, okay.
And we have a little bit of breaking news about the rescue of those miners. The rescuers have had to turn back and get out of the mine because of deteriorating air quality.
Yep.
So it's not looking good.
Which is what caused
the
problem in the first place.
Yes, thank you. So after the worst coal mine disaster in at least 25 years, Massey Energy CEO Don Blankenship is facing long overdue scrutiny for his record of putting coal profits over fundamental safety and health concerns.
He should be facing a long prison term.
Mm-hmm. He, of course, is a right-wing activist millionaire who sits on the boards of the U.S. Chamber of Commerce and the National Mining Association, used his company's ties to the industry-dominated Bush administration to paper over Massey's egregious environmental and health violations. Massey rewarded Republicans with massive donations after the company avoided paying billions in fines for a 2000 coal slurry disaster in Martin County, three times bigger than the Exxon Valdez. After both mine inspectors and Massey employees got the same message that it was more important to, quote, run coal than to follow safety rules, a deadly fire broke out in the Aracoma Alma mine in 2006, burning two men alive. Blankenship was abetted by former employees placed at the highest levels of the federal mine safety system. Remember that, Jim, the Bush administration habit of putting people from that industry in charge of watching that industry?
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. How'd that work out?
After being rejected twice by the Senate, one time Massey executive Dick Stickler was put in charge. And apparently, Jim, ironically, not a stickler for rules of any kind or safety rules or environmental concerns.
More of a dick, though.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. More of a dick than a stickler.
Yeah.
Really.
Mm-hmm.
Dick Stickler was put in charge of the MSHA in a recess appointment. Oh, a recess appointment. I thought that was never done ever before in the history of the world. Hmm. And Democrats might have had some actual concerns, like, oh, you know, that maybe things like this would happen if you put the Dick Stickler in charge. That maybe he wouldn't be much of a dickler and more of a stick about the, you know what I'm saying, a stickler more of a dick about the mining regulations.
God.
In the 1990s, Stickler oversaw Massey subsidiary Performance Coal, the operator of the deadly Upper Big Branch mine, after managing Beth Energy Mines, which incurred injury rates double the national average. Bush was the one that recessed appointed the Dick, who is not a Stickler.
No.
One federal mine inspector who wanted to shut down a mine was told to back off days before the fire broke out in the Aracoma mine. A federal mine inspector tried to close down that section of the mine but was told by his superior to back off and let them run coal. There was too much demand for coal. One of Blankenship's memos, 3 months before the Aracoma mine fire, Massey CEO Don Blankenship sent managers a memo saying, if any of you have been asked by your group presidents, your supervisors, engineers, or anyone else to do anything other than run coal, you need to ignore them and run coal. This memo is necessary only because we seem not to understand that coal pays the bills.
In other words, people are going to die and it'll be my fault.
Yes, and then the fire broke out and men were burned alive.
Yeah, Don, he should go to prison for a long time, and the company should be sued out of existence.
Don Blankenship, Massey CEO.
I run this company on a safety standard better than anybody's ever run a company in Central Appalachia.
Wow, that's a big, that's quite a high bar.
Yeah, if you say so, then okay. Nothing more to see here, Jim. Wow. Mike Snelling is the VP of Massey Energy.
We have one drill currently in operation that's drilled down about 560 feet. Right next to that, we have another drill hole that's already been drilled and in place, and it's about 1,100 feet deep. The diameter of the hole is 6 inches, and what we've done is we put an exhausting fan on that hole so we can take air readings and measure the quality of the air that's down in the mine.
And the quality of the air is deteriorating, so the rescuers had to abandon.
Yeah. How many were left?
Still four.
Chris?
Still four.
There were four, yeah. And 25 dead already. Governor Joe Manchin in West Virginia.
Why the families understood and were very agreeable that let's make sure that before you put rescuers in there, that you have them in the safest condition.
Yeah.
Yeah. Kevin Strickland, coal mine safety and health officer.
You just have to clear the area out. Make sure there's not another explosion.
Oh, they. Anyway, I agree with you, Jim, on that. I mean, that's the thing. There's no other way to spin this record. I mean, it's the worst. Yeah. It's absolutely the worst. And
it's clear he didn't care. He didn't give a damn.
Yeah. Well, he did care about running coal.
Right.
All right. And he also, I mentioned he was at that, Sean Hannity teabagger whatever thing not too long ago. You know, calling people environmental wackos. And all right. Hey, speaking of the teabaggers, Rupert Murdoch apparently does not watch Fox News. What the?
Fox?
He, as you know, for over a year, they have promoted and celebrated the anti-Obama Tea Party movement. He was interviewed recently. Did you see this on TV yesterday?
Yeah.
He said his company should not be supporting the movement. Asked whether it was ethical for officials at Fox to promote the Tea Party, he said no. I don't think we should be supporting the Tea Party or any other party. But I'd like to investigate what you're saying before condemning anyone. Well, why don't you turn on Fox News for any given 9-second period?
Wow.
By the way, some of the Tea Parties even were branded on Fox News as an FNC, Tax Day Tea Party.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that would be more than just promoting and supporting. It would be,
I have no idea. Tea baggers. Never heard of the blacks. Glenn who?
boy. Okay, so we were playing, and I apologize that we did play the Palin and Bachman clip, speaking of the Tea Party queens. The Democratic Congressional Campaign Committee is out with a Bachman or Palin quiz in which it challenges you to correctly guess which individual uttered a set of highlighted lies. One said President Obama's trying to force America's youth into re-education camps. Jim.
Does it matter?
This is too Bachman. Easy. The other insists that health insurance reform will create government-sponsored death panels.
Yeah,
the other.
Sarah, yeah.
The other one, whatever. The Democratic National Committee setting up a greatest hits video montage of Palin-Bachman quotes, dubbing the two extreme faces of the GOP. And as I mentioned earlier, Jim, pretty faces, I'll give them that.
Mm-hmm.
It's the prettiest hate has ever looked. And
as I always said, if you can get Molly Ivins and Ann Richards' brains into those bodies, you'd have something.
You know what, though? Sarah Palin's eyes are too far apart.
That is a little freaky, I got to say.
Yeah. What's going on there?
That's why it's even more disturbing when she winks. It's just.
Was that a little fetal alcohol syndrome going on there or something?
Oh, Chris Louise. Oh, boy.
Oh, sorry.
Okay, her running mate, could you take your organ out, please, for the death of a maverick? He's, wow. Is there one thing he's ever stood for that he's still for? I don't think so.
Peter says no.
In May 2008, John McCain laid out his nuclear policy in a speech that sounded like it could have been written by President Obama. He said, the Cold War ended almost 20 years ago. The time has come to take further measures to reduce dramatically the number of nuclear weapons in the world's arsenals. It's time for the U.S. to show the kind of leadership the world expects from us in the tradition of American presidents who work to reduce the nuclear threat to mankind. They called him Flipper. McCain attacked Obama's new nuclear strategy, asserting that it wouldn't allocate enough funding to maintain our nuclear weapons infrastructure.
Well,
funny, in that entire speech on nuclear weapons in 2008, McCain never mentioned his professed concern over the funding of nuclear infrastructure, despite the fact the Bush administration was funding it at much lower levels.
They call him Flipper, Flipper, faster than lightning.
That is kind of a problem. A lot of these things are really old, and we don't even know if they work anymore.
Yeah, well, yeah, it just, but it is stunning, the speed with which he is against things that are, anything that Obama's for, even when he's, you know,
on record. I was for it before I was against it, my friends.
Jim in Louisiana.
I'm against being for it, I think.
Yes.
On the mining accident. Hi, Jim.
Hi, how are you? I just wanted to make a comment about the miners' accident in West Virginia and the appalling facts that are being revealed now as far as the mine owners' complete disregard with the safety citations and the necessary repairs. But let me bring you back to where that started. It was back during the days of the Bush administration when Elaine Cho, who was the then Secretary of Labor.
Mrs. Mitch McConnell.
Oh, yeah, yes. Mitch McConnell. I'm glad you made that connection. A lot of people don't know that. Mm-hmm. But he was the Senate Majority Leader at that time, and they were vigorously leading cuts to anything that would be of any benefit to the working men and women, including their safety. It's just, go get the job done, and if you die, we'll get somebody else to do it. Yeah. And that was their attitude, and unfortunately...
Yeah, that's how they look at it. Hey, job openings. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, exactly. We're stimulating the economy.
Who says we're not creating jobs? Yeah,
yes,
I know.
Yes, we are. Yes, and so the thing that I don't understand about this is who's going to be held responsible? Is it going to be Elaine Chao? Is it going to be the Republican majority House and Senate that helped pass all these cuts? Or is it going to be the mine owners? You certainly can't hold the miners responsible, although I'll guarantee you there will be a operator error type of determination made from the company point of view. I can promise you that.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, you can always count on the mining company's investigation to turn up the truth. Yes.
This sort of thing has come up before, and it has always been due to human error. Dave,
but it just goes to show you, like, this, you know, latest nominee that the obstructionist asshats blocked because he was too union-y. It's like, guess what unions do? They prevent stuff like this. This is, you know, they look after things that are going to protect workers. I mean, it's... All right, 47 minutes after the hour, right back on the Stephanie Miller Show.
Stephanie Miller, she has one of these liberal talk shows that nobody listens to.
It's the Stephanie Miller Show. Stephanie Miller.
Rex in Taos, New Mexico. You're on the Stephanie Miller Show. Hey, Rex. Welcome. Hello, Rex. Oh, I didn't hit the button in the right way at the right time. Hi, Rex.
Hi there. Mm. I just wanted to say with the success of the video by James O'Keefe and getting Acorn shut down, maybe we could hire him to make a video of Don Blankenship's comments and then get the Massey coal mine shut down as well.
Yeah, yeah, I'm sure he'll get right on that. Oh, my God. By the way, did you watch Rachel Maddow's expose of how, you know, just completely crooked all of this stuff was that O'Keefe did and the way, Fox News edited it and unbelievable.
Wow. So it was like a concerted effort among Breitbart and O'Keefe and Fox News?
Yes, I know. Mm-hmm. It's hard to believe. What the Fox? Really? From the Department of Socialism Lives. Huh? General Motors, steadily returning to health after its near collapse in 2009, said Wednesday it plans to pay off its government loans by June, 5 years ahead of schedule, and could report a profit as early as next year.
Hmm.
Seems like maybe that might have been a good idea, Jim.
Interesting. Just proves Obama is a failure.
Yeah. Hundreds of thousands of jobs saved because of that move.
Mm-hmm.
You know, not only in the in GM itself, but in the ancillary companies that depend mm-hmm. on GM for business.
Mm-hmm. By the way, speaking of jobs, Ben Bernanke, Federal Reserve Chairman, talking about that yesterday.
More than 40% of the unemployed have been out of work for 6 months or longer, nearly double the share of a year ago. I'm particularly concerned about that last statistic because long spells of unemployment erode skills and lower the longer-term income and employment prospects of those workers.
Yes, but here's an inspirational story for you. Mama was out of work for 2 years before I landed my latest fart joke radio show. Woo! Millie, that was a lot of wine. And somehow I dusted off my fart joke skills, and here I am.
Hooray!
Life can change in the blink of an eye.
Good thing you had a stockpile of wine.
Yeah.
Unemployment yes. period.
Oof. All right. We have been mentioning today the federal agents of California have arrested a man and charged him with threatening House Speaker Nancy Pelosi over her support for health care. Mm-hmm. Gee, where could that have come from? Any sort of anti-Pelosi rhetoric that might have some nutcake want to? As you know, this would be the second such arrest in as many days. The FBI in Washington State arrested a man for threatening Democratic Senator Patty Murray of Washington. Who also supported the legislation? Where could they be getting that from, Jim? What with the old reloading and putting crosshairs on people's websites and, Democratic...
people commemorating the Murrah Building explosion by marching on Washington with guns.
Yeah. Did you see the latest news this morning about the guy that was arrested for threatening Nancy Pelosi?
No. Gregory Giusti?
Yeah. Giusti. His mom has come out to the media today and said it's because of Fox News. She came
out... I said that earlier on the Stephanie Miller broadcast. You don't listen to me, do you?
I do.
Okay.
Not everyone is listening in the first hour.
You don't listen to me, do you, Jim?
What?
Several federal officials said the man made dozens of calls to Pelosi's homes in California and Washington, as well as to her husband's business office. They said he recited her home address and said if she wanted to see it again, she would not support health care overhaul. One official said the man is believed to have spoken directly with Pelosi at least once. Oh, they.
Wow.
Can you imagine?
Hmm. Hey, maybe it was Sock.
Nancy? Just you? Oh, boy. Okay, they are out peddling their latest lies, by the way, on health care. Nudie, our good friend. Yes, as you know, Sarah Palin started with the death panels, which was a complete, Now Nudie is urging Republicans to campaign on a new equally absurd myth. Over the last few days, he has been appearing on television and radio, alleging that health reform includes, quote, 16,000 IRS agents as health police.
What?
Wow.
Noting the 16,000 IRS agents claim is wildly inaccurate. Factcheck.org explained that the new health law, it requires the IRS mostly to hand out tax credits, not collect penalties. Nevertheless, Gingrich pushing gamely on, hyping his own false claim with a Nazi Germany comparisons. Good. Gingrich claimed that Democrats are hiring 16,000 IRS agents as a health Gestapo like that of the Nazi secret police.
Oh, come on.
He said every Republican candidate should campaign on a promise defunding these government policemen, already Republicans across the country echoing this false charge.
How does he get away with this crap?
And by the way, despite the domestic terrorist attack against an IRS building in Austin, Texas earlier this year, conservatives continuing to stoke fear and hatred towards the government agency. You remember Steve King, the stunning Steve King of Iowa, Republican, saying that he too fears the IRS and wants to abolish it. So he's sort of a little bit of an apologist for the guy that flew the plane into the... All right. Meanwhile, three Republican governors. Did you see Pawlenty out there with the crazy twins yesterday? He is one of the three Republican governors who are going around their Democratic attorney generals to file a lawsuit against the health care bill.
Mm-hmm.
Along with Jim Givens of Nevada, Jan Brewer of Arizona have announced they. Can you? If I was a constituent in that state, I would be pissed.
Yeah.
They're spending their taxpayer money, their top attorney saying there is no chance, like every other legal expert is saying, and the governor's, no, we're going to spend money anyway.
And I know, at least in the case of Arizona, they have absolutely no money to spend on frivolous things like this.
What else is Politico going to spend money on? Bridge repair? Come on, that's nuts. Preventative maintenance?
Oh, boy. Hey, you know what? Democratic Senator Robert Menendez is going after airlines for charging for carry-on luggage. Yay!
Yay!
Because Spirit Airlines is charging $45 for hand luggage that doesn't fit under the passenger seat.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm thinking, he flies Spirit?
I would never carry roadkill on an airplane. Oh, carry on.
We need to pay him $45 a year more so he doesn't need to fly Spirit Airlines. All right, that's it for us. I'd like to thank Crystal Boy, Jim Ward, Rebecca Taylor. See you tomorrow on the Stephanie Miller Show.